Right, the time is now 11:02, and we will begin the meeting of the District of Columbia Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. This meeting has been properly noticed. My name is Tamika Collier. I'm board chair, and we have all of the members of the board here, Carol Schwartz and Shamari Wade in person, and we have Norma Hutchinson on the phone. Moving to the agenda, please review and let me know if you have any changes. If not, then I will entertain a motion to adopt the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Great. Again, we do have a quorum. First up, we will have a report from Ms. Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Office of Open Government conducted two Open Meetings Act trainings over the course of this past month. Both were MOTA trainings. One was a standard boards and commission training, and the other was a point of contact training. The point of contact training was recorded on video yesterday so that MOTA can turn that session into an online training or remote training. It's my understanding that the combined OMA and ethics training, the ethics training was recorded previously, so they now have two in the hopper. I made it clear to MOTA that even though the training yesterday that was recorded was a point of contact training, they should turn that in just to into a regular boards and commissions training, because several of those slides that were shown yesterday showed how points of contact can access our website. But as requested, I redid the slides in Keynote and provided them to MOTA in PDF version.
Okay.
The Office of Open Government matter versus Yates, that matter has been continued yet again until August 18th. So hopefully there will be an update for the next board meeting. And finally, since the last board meeting, the Office of Open Government has fielded 25 FOIA advice requests, 6 OMA advice requests, 11 of which were technical in nature. We have in the hopper about 3 opinions that we're working on concurrently, so we hope to have a more robust update for the board members next month in terms of the complaints and advisory opinions to be issued.
Okay.
That's it. That concludes the update.
Thank you. Regarding the training, is the idea of recording it and putting it on the MOTA website, which I think is a great idea, to catch the stragglers, and they will still offer live trainings, or is the videos in lieu of live training?
The videos will not be in lieu of live trainings. As we agreed when Mr. Sobin was still here, the videos will be another offering to assist those members, boards and commissions who cannot travel to us as easily. There are some members of public bodies who actually reside outside of the region.
Okay.
So it's an effort to reach everyone where they may be and to get everyone trained. I still do not know, however, which is concerning, but I'm going to wait until the trainings have actually been produced. On video, that is, to find out what MOTA's plan is for confirming who has attended these trainings, so that we've got a clear record of who has been trained and who needs to be trained. MOTA was kind enough to provide to us last week the attendee list for the last 2 trainings, but there are several others that have occurred, but we're hoping that we can get an update on the attendees list more regularly.
Okay.
But I don't know how we're going to work out confirming who has attended these trainings and who has yet to be trained. Currently, the Open Meetings Act requires that every board and commission member be trained on a yearly basis. We have no way of tracking that right now, formally, that is.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And, one other matter. Last month, you reported on an issue with OCTO and access to information. Is that still ongoing?
To my knowledge, yes, it is. I reported on OCTO and access to information in connection with an opinion that this office issued in May. So I've not been given any update by the Executive Office of the Mayor and their Open Government Officer on what policies or procedures are new that will improve access to emails for FOIA searches.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you have any questions for Ms. Hughes?
No,
Moving on, report from Mr. Brian Flowers.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. I'll start with an update of our monthly statistics. See, we opened 4 investigations and closed 3, so that we have 1 more open than we had last year, last month. And in terms of stayed cases, there's also 1 additional stayed case. That was a case that the Office of the Inspector General elected to take, a really large case that we didn't think we had the resources to handle, to be honest with you. And in turn, and we meet with them monthly, and we went back and forth with them, and finally they decided they would take that case. So we can expect to receive their report in a couple of years.
And then we'll ask you to do some additional research after you get the report, but we know the drill, okay?
Okay. So then in terms of the chart of stayed cases, there's the 1 additional case, and it's an OAG case. So we're still waiting to dislodge, I think there are 12 cases that arose out of 1 incident. We're waiting for that one, that big one. Nothing yet. We've been promised a couple, so keep you updated at the next meeting. Publication and reporting obligations. June 30 marked the end of the third quarter of FY17, so we have updated our performance measures for the third quarter. We met or exceeded our goals in each category. It's uncertain at this point how the backlog at Octo and fulfilling email search requests will affect next quarter statistics. It didn't affect this quarter statistics. Now, the delay was between 4 and 6 weeks, which accounts for a large portion of our 120-day timeline for investigation. So, and again, I think that we'll see some impact next quarter, not this quarter. Fortunately, Octo appears to have resolved the problems for us. They produced probably 6 results for us. And a couple of our investigations were completely dependent upon email because they're email cases. So one, we thought we'd have it today, but maybe next month. So the report is in your Dropbox and on the city administrator's website. I'm trying to see if there's anything I kind of want to highlight. The statistics that probably move the most are toward the end of the report. The others are basically 100% in just about every category. For example, percent of advice queries that we receive that were handled as informal rather than formal advice, that's probably always going to be high because most of the inquiries are handled informally. Percent of formal written advisory opinions appealed to the ethics board, we anticipate that's going to be 0 most of the time, but you never know. Let's see, just some of the other. So the big one, again, is the completion of investigations within 120 days. And on that one, we were, again, at 100%, but next quarter, it's probably not going to be. So in terms of just the numbers of requests for informal ethics advice this quarter, the requests were up. I'd say we see 50 more than we did the last quarter, then maybe almost 75 more than the quarter before that. I don't know what was driving those numbers. Let's see, just picking some of these statistics. Now, one statistic that I didn't understand at first was the number of preliminary investigations that we received that were resulted from hotline phone calls. And that's been 0 all 3 quarters for the whole year, and I couldn't understand that. But then I spoke with the investigators, and what happens is they call on the hotline, and if there is something that seems like, you know, there's a credible violation, then we direct them to the website to file a written report. So we take the complaint in that way rather than on the hotline. So we rarely receive reports on the hotline. They're almost always referred to the website, and then we have it in writing as opposed to having to dictate it from staff.
Do we have any indication if we are losing numbers because they are then requested to go to the website? Like, do we keep the statistics as to how many phone calls we have coming in and how many of those actually follow through and file through the website?
We don't have a statistic on that, but we do have the number of phone calls that come in. So that may be a better statistic than the number of phone calls that resulted in a preliminary investigation.
Well, but we'll have to find a way of identifying which one of those any action is taken on. But, yes.
Yes. And the problem is sometimes those are anonymous calls. So the people, we don't even have information to call them back. Even though if there's a caller ID, we will call them back.
We may be able to be of assistance. WADA has already started looking at some statistical analysis of the BEGA site in terms of the complaint reports and other data that's there.
Okay.
We can certainly work with the ethics side of the house to draw in that data so that could give you some reliable statistics.
Okay.
But we can WADA, holding WADA, he can certainly try to do that.
I just want to do a follow-up of our chair's issue that she raised. And my first thought when you said that was I think people will call a hotline. A lot of people are older people. They don't do computers anyway. So you tell them to go to the website. They're not going to do that next step. They probably may not even have a computer or know how to use one. I think you could be losing some real valuable information. And I would suggest that you not just tell people. You know, I think young people, and I know you're not really young, Brian, but a lot of staff members are, they think everybody's computer literate and everybody will do a computer. I've certainly seen in my lifetime many people, especially poorer individuals, are not computer literate. And therefore, I think that I would not lose that option by just referring. I mean, it took a lot of guts probably to call in the first place, other than people that mean to do others harm. And we know there's a few like that that just are mad about something and want to get people in trouble. But where they're legitimate things, and as I've run into people around town and they know me and they know what I'm doing now, they'll start to tell me about something. And I will say we have a hotline, and I refer them to the hotline. And if they call up the hotline and they're then referred to, you have to file it on the computer. I think that's a real turnoff for many people. And so I think our job is to get information of wrongdoing, however it comes. And if we are stopping one avenue, I don't think that's in our best interest or the city's best interest. So I would encourage you to do more with phone calls than just refer people to your website.
We do maintain a log of all the calls, and I may be misstating what the investigators do, but that...
Okay, well, I hope we'll just relook at it.
Okay.
The only other point I wanted to make is I noticed in reading the report there was a lot of not available, not available, not available. What does that mean as I looked at...
Most of those are statistics that the mayor has required, and the mayor would generate those statistics. Those are not statistics that we would generate,
okay.
All of those.
Okay. Could we just put an asterisk or something on it and say not available and why it's not available? Because I thought it made the report look inadequate by just having not available, not available. And
the only way to be sure would be to look at the report after it's published to the city administrator's website, because again, those are categories that the mayor is supposed to populate.
Okay.
These are categories that we ourselves complete. The other categories are completed outside of this office.
Well, can we just say completed within our office, not completed within our office? Something that I don't know if we can do anything.
I don't know if we can either.
Okay. But you might want to look at it, because when I saw the not availables, I thought, well, you know, I like a report, but so much of the information I'd like to look at is not available. And why?
Well, what might be more helpful would be to produce the final report that has all the information, and not only the information that we generate.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Cooks, did you have a point of clarification?
Yes, I did. Just to go back on what Brian said, usually when we take in calls from the hotline, the individuals will usually ask, you know, they're asking questions about the process of filing complaints. most of the individuals who call on the hotline, they don't really want to file through the hotline. So 9 times out of 10, what will happen is we'll run down a list of how they can file it. You can come in, you can file it on the website, you can call. So 9 times out of 10, from my experience, when I answer the hotline, they'll take my information or whatever investigator answers the phone, and they'll call back to our regular phone. And from what I can remember, I don't think I've lost anybody from the hotline referring them to how to fill it out online or to give me a call. So I don't think we're losing anybody in that sense.
Okay, good.
So I think that's great, but as far as, you know, taking the statistics of coming in through the hotline, I think it would be good if we capture that in a different way than from what we have been doing. So that would be great. But I don't think we're losing anybody, and we're not just answering the phone and saying, hey, refer it over to, go to the website and fill out a form. They usually explain it, but most of the people who call, they're kind of uncomfortable. And some people are scared to actually talk to a person, so they feel more comfortable filling out the application and putting the documents with it and sending the complaint in that way. So it depends on the person and what they're talking about. And sometimes they just call, they just have questions about it, and they never really don't have the gall to really file the complaint at that moment. So they'll wait, and then later on, you know, we'll write a little note, and then we'll probably see it. So I don't really think we're losing anybody. So I don't want you to have that impression from what was said, but...
But I would think about changing that to the number of calls to the hotline as opposed to calls that became preliminary investigations. Then we would at least get some idea of the volume of calls.
We do now have the ability with the migration to 365. OCTO recently inquired which numbers they want to have the voicemail to mail option. So the BIGA hotline should be, if not now, migrated soon to that option. So if someone does leave a voicemail, it will be turned to text
right. In
an email. So that's another means of tracking the number of calls that are coming in
right. As
well.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So moving on to trainings and outreach. Attended by staff. Last month, I attended the annual meeting of the Uniform Law Commission, of which I have been a member for more than 15 years. The ULC is a 125-year-old organization of more than 300 attorneys from 50 states and territories responsible for recommending uniform state laws. It's always treated the district the same as a state. At the meeting, I was appointed to a newly formed ethics committee where we were to undertake a study of best practices on the application of ethics rule to non-governmental organizations. I'm hoping that's going to be helpful in the work that I do here. So I also spoke to a District of Columbia history class at Cardozo High School on changes in the district government since home rule. Now that, for some reason, did make me a little bit nervous. I'm just not used to bringing it.
I would have paid money to see you standing up in front of a group of high school kids.
It was interesting. I also attended a training program offered by OAG and Senior Attorney Grimaldi, which is described in more detail below. So conducted by staff, we conducted 11, which is 2 more than the 9 conducted last month. The 11 trainings included the normal 2 new employee orientations and MSS or FDS trainings, 1 general board and commission training, training at the Child and Family Services Agency, and a joint ethics training for DSLBD in the Office of the Deputy Mayor for Greater Economic Opportunity, a training for EOM staff, and a training for Councilmember Charles Allen's office, as well as our regular monthly ethics training. Senior Attorney Grimaldi presented a training session for OAG that covered the history of the religion clauses in the First Amendment and the Supreme Court's recent decision in Trinity Lutheran Church versus Comer, which held that the free exercise clause prohibits a state from excluding a church from an otherwise available public benefit program. Now, as an attendee, I can report that the training was both scintillating and informative, and it's a good reason to add Mr. Grimaldi to our training rotation. He has volunteered to begin participating in some of those exercises. Ethics Day. We discussed this last month preliminarily. So last year, Vega held its annual ethics training and best practices symposium on October 20th at the UDC David A. Clark School of Law. This year, we're proposing that the board hold Ethics Day on Thursday, October 20, of course, subject report to the board's prerogative to find a date that works for all of the members. So we also believe that the board can meet in the morning and Ethics Day will follow later that day, so there's only one day for all of the activities. So we're proposing that the program be held here at One Judiciary Square as opposed to David A. Clark School of Law. We think it's just more convenient to district government employees as well as Vega staff for an all-day event to be held here. So we're proposing to invite OIG, OCF, and the D.C. It's not the D.C. Auditor. We're going to invite the D.C. Auditor, but they're not going to. There are no presentations for the D.C. Auditor.
Okay.
Then we also, that's in addition to OGE and OOG. Now, in the Dropbox, there's a proposal for several different programs, and you'll see those. Obviously, it's a draft. If you have other ideas, other thoughts, there's still time. There's time to make changes. So we're also planning at the Ethics Day program to roll out a new training presentation that will include six new 30-second videos similar to the Miss Ethics video that has proven to be popular. The goals are outreach and education, as we're trying to find ways to increase the number of employees attending in-person trainings. Now, we are also close to finalizing an online training module that's been long in the making. The online training module will allow us to require that FDS filers certify that they have taken ethics training to fulfill the existing statutory requirement that all filers certified on an annual basis that they've completed at least one ethics training program within the previous year. And I think that's similar to what Ms. Hughes alluded to. And that's what we really plan to do. When they fill out their FDS statement, they also certify that they have completed the training requirement.
Can I just jump in? You may have mentioned this, Brian, but just let the board know that the proposed date for Ethics Day, October 19, could become the board's meeting day for the month of October. So there's that consideration, which we've done before. As a matter of fact, that's become, I think, the uniform practice that the board meets or has met before the symposia in years past, but we saw no reason to change that kind of setup for Ethics Day.
Okay, that was my question, but I'm fine with changing it.
Yeah, and if the board wants to do something like meeting in the community or something and have this somewhere else, that's another thought.
I mean, given the time crunch, if we have this space here,
it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is where so many D.C. government employees are housed. So
I think we need to reiterate it's Thursday, October 19th, because you had mistakenly said 20th. So I just wanted
to. I think you could once the cement firms up a little bit more at the September meeting, you can announce in advance that the date of the October meeting will be changed from that first Thursday to, assuming that we're going to stick with the 19th, to the 19th.
Okay, advisory opinions and advice, informal advice, approximately 59 since the last meeting. That's down from 78 last month. This includes lobbyist registration-related inquiries and also, I think, some FDS inquiries for the late filers. And I would suspect that many employees are on leave during this period, which could be why the numbers are down. So we received no new formal requests for opinion since the last meeting. Several were submitted as what appeared to be formal requests, but once the requests were analyzed, it was determined that informal advice, generally in the form of an email, was sufficient. Again, this is one of our performance measures. And we looked at whether or not there really is any request for safe harbor, or is this a pattern that a lot of times it's something that we've already addressed in other formal advice inquiries. So there's no reason to duplicate it, and we just sort of cite to that, or it's really plain on its face, and the person is satisfied. And the other thing is that once when we give someone informal advice in a written email, that's usually sufficient for them. They just want something that they can just wave around and say, this is the guidance and advice that I was seeking.
Great. I have the Vincent Orange response here for you to review. I'm not sure if that changes the stats at all in terms of formal versus informal, but I did want to make note that that did come in since the last board meeting.
And Madam Chair, I think earlier when you said that you didn't know why we're getting so many calls for or emails for advice, I think more people are aware we're here and are maybe more conscious of ethics and therefore seeking. So I think there is a reason, and it's probably a good one.
So that request is a good example of a request for formal opinion. And then we look at it and determine, well, do we really need to jump through all the procedures and things that are required for a formal opinion, or can we do something quicker and more expeditious? Would that serve the person's interest better? I don't know what form that will take, will it be published or not. So we'll look at it.
I hadn't thought it through, but I think the board could well consider this morning to, to post it on the website, because it was, and for the record, so we know what we're talking about, Mr. Orange received from the board last September a formal advisory opinion on his post-council employment restrictions. And I think 2 weeks ago, he followed up and asked two questions looking for some clarification on that opinion. So what the board reviewed this morning, and as I think I saw her do, the chair signed the written response, we can post that on the website. So there's the opinion itself is on the website, so anybody who wants to follow through could see what the board's response is.
Right.
To his follow-up questions.
Yeah, if the original opinion was a formal opinion, then this one should take the same format.
Okay.
So post it. Okay.
Ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct. If we've completed advisory opinions and advice, I think we have. So in response to a request to schedule a meeting with Councilmember Charles Allen and his staff to discuss the CCC during the council recess, we're told that the council members committee director that a second hearing on the CCC has been tentatively scheduled for November 2nd. The committee would also take up that day Bill 22-38, which would require lobbyists to file monthly activity reports, and Bill 22-344, which would amend the definition of lobbying to require disclosure of all communications with executive and legislative branch officials made with the purpose of influencing contracts and other procurement actions. So there'll be lots to discuss at the meeting, which we hope will occur within the next several weeks. The council member's office has proposed several tentative dates. I don't know if there are other bills. Are those the only two bills that you think are going to affect the CCC at this point, Jack?
Those were the only two that Ms. Mitchell noted that would be taken up that day. That's not necessarily to say that they won't consider others at other times. However, what I will point out to the board is November 2 just happens to be the date for the board's November meeting. So you might want to think about, and I think the meeting, the hearing is like 2:00 in the afternoon. So one thought is perhaps all of you come down to the committee hearing, and I think be a nice showing, so to speak, in terms of where the board's coming from to push this CCC through to passage.
Yeah, we'll work with you and Mr. Flowers to develop testimony for that.
Rulemaking. There's been no rulemaking activity since the last meeting. On the budget, we continue to hold monthly budget meetings. The next budget meeting will include both OGE and OOG as part of the reintegration of the offices. Staffing, we're in the process of upgrading one of our investigator positions. Once that process is complete, we'll focus on the recruiting for one of the two administrative support positions we received in the FY18 budget. And again, the plan there is to bring someone on for the remainder of FY17 and then hire another person beginning October 1. I think there's another matter also involving staffing.
Right. I just got an update from Ms. Peterson this morning on the vacancy for the director's position. We've revised the position description that had been put together back in 2012. Based largely on 5 years worth of experience and a few technical corrections, and that's going to be put together in a package today, as I understand it, and forwarded to DCHR so that they can post the vacancy, and we can start getting resumes in and look then to start the interview process.
Lobbyist financial disclosure matters. First, public financial disclosure statement filers. So we're still working to get all non-compliant public financial disclosure statement filers to file their forms via our e-filing system, and these are the ones who were required to file by this past May 15. Approximately 90% of designated filers for this year have filed their forms. On June 16, we published the list of filers and non-filers in the register. We've also published that information to our website, which we believe may encourage additional employees to file. We'll continue to update that list as employees file their forms, and we are all currently maintaining a 24-hour response time for all FDS inquiries.
Have you received any response since June 16th in terms of surprise, more people actually filing? Is it having any intended effect?
Let's bring Ms. Stuart Mitchell up.
Good morning, Madam Chair, board members. Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
We've shamed people now since June, and the general question is, have you received a response of any type to the public shaming?
I don't think we can tell if there's been a direct response. We haven't had people call up and say, hey, I saw my name on this list. What do I need to do to remove it? But we do continue to see people trickle in and file their forms. I'd say at just about the same rate as before we published the list.
Okay.
I don't know if there's more that we could do to make them aware that they're on the list. Maybe we could tweet that is on there? I don't know.
We had a conversation before the meeting started about the Vega Twitter account, which I did not know we had.
Madam Chair, are we letting their bosses know, their employers know that they have not filed?
That's coming up. Yeah.
Okay, good.
We did that for last year's public filers, and it worked. We had 100% compliance.
I think that's probably the best way to do it.
That's certainly a step that has to be taken before we take the most drastic of measures, I think. Yeah. Confidential financial disclosure statement enforcement for the current year. So we're currently reviewing CFDS reports and following up with ethics officers regarding CFDS submissions to determine whether employees are still employed with the district or separate, and that's for the most recent CFDS filings, either the filings that go to the agency. And so now we come to the delinquent, the scofflaws, the CFDS filers from last year, and this is May 2016, persons who have not filed. So last month we informed you that we sent out on June 21, 2017, fine letters to 21 of these persons who failed to file last year. After receiving status updates from ethics officers, we discovered that 6 of the 21 either properly filed their statements or have long been separated from the district. 3 employees recently filed their forms and were in the process of seeking garnishment in the amount of $300 of the $300 fine associated with late filing for those 3 employees who filed their 2016 statements late after our June 21 fine letter went out. So we're preparing to bring enforcement actions against the remaining 12 employees who have failed to file their form and failed to pay their fine. Now, many of these employees have not filed for 2 consecutive years. And we do have a plan to bring enforcement action, but I just think it's more appropriate to discuss this type of enforcement action that may result in litigation in the executive session. So we'll do that later in the meeting. But we do intend to enforce the law against these 12 persons. Lobbyists. Lobbyist activity reports detailing lobbying activity conducted in the first 6 months of 2017 were filed on Monday, June 10. To date, all registered lobbyists who are required to file their lobbying activity reports have filed. 10 late filed. Of those lobbyists, 7 have paid their fines and we're working to collect fines from the remaining 3 lobbyists. And we didn't receive any requests to waive fines this year.
How much is the fine?
The fines are $10 a day up to 30 days, maximum $300. That's the fine. Now, in terms of how much these people were fined, we can give you that report.
Not necessary.
So we have begun a desk review audit of the July 2017 activity reports, and the January audits have been completed. There were a few discrepancies that were found, but nothing that resulted in adverse findings with respect to any of the subjects. Our review focuses on the gifts that were given by lobbyists to public officials, whether they're persons or entities that engaged in lobbying during the first half of the year without registering. And then finally, we look at whether both the lobbyists and their clients are properly registered. And that's sort of what we focus on. I think we're in fairly good shape with the lobbyists at this point. And our new auditor is doing a very good job going through the reports. Next, he's going to have to go through the financial disclosure statement. There are few more of those, like 300 versus 3,000. Non-confidential investigations. We have 2 on the agenda today. The first is just an update in the case of Jaron Price. And that's just to let you know that we transmitted the record to the appeals court, and the court has set a briefing schedule. And you see the dates that Mr. Price is set to file his brief and the date the government is set to file its brief. The next non-confidential investigation involves a person. I'm going to have Attorney Cooks come up and present that.
Good morning, Madam Chair, board members.
Good morning.
Henry Jarrington Bazemore is a former investigation pursuant to DC Official Code 1-1162.12b. OGE received a complaint which alleged that Mr. Bazemore, a former employee of DC Child and Family Services Agency, had misused government property by renting zip cars under CFSA zip car account without approval and during hours outside of his tour of duty. Our investigation revealed that Mr. Bazemore rented zip cars during overnight hours, on the weekends, and while on leave. During an interview with OGE staff, Mr. Bazemore admitted to using CFSA zip cars for personal reasons rather than official government purposes in violation of the code of conduct. He expressed remorse for his conduct and agreed to pay a fine of $4,500 by $400 per month. Pursuant to DC Official Code 1-1162.21A4AV, OGE is presenting the public negotiated disposition entered into between the interim director and Mr. Bazemore for the board's approval. And the actual negotiated disposition was placed in the Dropbox.
I don't have any questions.
No questions. Do you want me to move the motion for approval?
Do we need to do that for?
This is being presented to the board for approval.
Yeah.
Indicate for the record that the majority of you.
Well, I approve.
Okay. I approve.
We have the actual document in the order.
Norma.
I approve.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Chairman, you approve?
Yes. I approve.
Yes.
And someone sign for me?
Yeah, Norma, you want to authorize me to sign for you?
Would you please? Thank you.
Sure.
All right, and for the record, all four board members approved. Do you have any more updates on public investigation?
We do not, Madam Chairperson. That concludes our public presentation.
Oh. I'll go ahead and ask you about the Kyer Henderson matter. Last month, you all were in the process of getting more information. Are you still reviewing it? Do we have a timetable?
We are still reviewing it. We have another interview coming up, but I don't think there's anything to report.
No, there are no new updates. We are still reviewing evidence and working on a second interview date for Ms. Henderson.
Okay. All right, opportunity for public comment. Did Mr. Sindrum call in? Oh, he hung up, okay. Anybody else? All right, I'll entertain a motion to move us into executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Code Section 2-57B to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B13 and personnel matters pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B10.
So moved.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Majority carries. The time is now 11:45, and we'll go into executive session. All right, the time is now 12:10. We are back on the public record. We do not have anything to report out from executive session. Do we have any additional comments from the public? If not, the next meeting is September the 7th at 11 a.m. Yeah, we can adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Norma.
Bye, Norma.
See you, Norma.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Get home safely.
Take your notes.
Bye. You can take your notes.
Bye-bye.
You can recycle.
All of that? Okay. Wow.
Yes.
That stuff you might want to get.